Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We did some stuff this week. We
did we?
We had an article.
Oh, it's a pleasure to find that out.
We had on Monday, we linked to Macworld article. On Tuesday, I did a link. On Wednesday, I did a Macworld article. And then came Thursday, March 31st, in which we posted your article about demystifying the copy and paste video, the Apple and the Enterprise report card, two articles about the new release of Audio Hijack, a link about Apple under embargo right at the time of announcement, launching its Business Essential service, and your back page column. So basically, several weeks worth of work appeared yesterday.
It feels like it was like the last day of the month, and we were suddenly like, oh no.
Yeah.
Quick, get everything out before the end of the month.
Pro tip for people who listen to the talk show, by the way, is do you notice that John Gruber has ads that he has to read by the end of a calendar month? I'm just saying, if it's the last 6 hours of the month, check your podcast player. There'll be a new episode of the talk show. That's just a little pro tip from the inside. Yeah. Except not. As it turns out, the Enterprise report card I was working on all for a long time, and it was ready to go sort of yesterday afternoon, and I was going to post it at some point on Thursday, and then I got the heads up that Apple wanted to brief me about something business related, and I thought, well, I need to get it out before then, so I posted it in the morning. And then while I'm like off my briefing before I write up my story, I get a text from Paul Kafasis at Rogue Amoeba who says, Audio Hijack is out. And I'm like, oh man, because I had pre-written two articles about Audio Hijack. And so I started posting those, and it's the last day of the month. So yes, the back page is preferably on the last day of the month. Like an episode of the talk show, the back page likes to live right at the end of the month.
That's true.
It's like trying to harken back to magazines and all of that. And so end up, yeah, we posted everything yesterday.
It never rains, but it pours.
It's like the Star Trek movie, right? Fire everything. We did that. We fired everything yesterday.
I'm done.
Nothing left.
I'm going on break.
Yeah, that's it. We're done. Except for this podcast, which will complete our week. So it's funny. I got up from my desk yesterday and I was like, what did I do today? And I'm like, oh, right. I posted everything. Okay. This was a good day. This was a very busy day for me. Sometimes it's hard to tell when you're just
sitting in your garage
with cats.
Right. Well, there's that. And it's for me, my week has always got a weird shape to it where Mondays are worthless for me because nobody... I get some stuff done, but like a lot of time on Monday, I don't have anything that's pressing. And then I definitely spend some time frittering that I should spend doing work. And then like Tuesday afternoon rolls around and that's when all of a sudden it's like, oh, all the things. And like basically my Wednesday and my Thursday are like back to back and I'm just like flat out. And then Friday is like a little bit chiller and I sort of wind down into the weekend. But then the problem is I never learn, right? I'm always on like Monday. I'm like, I've got nothing to do. I'm just going to mess around with some stuff. And then Tuesday, it's like, why didn't I do all this stuff yesterday when I had nothing to do?
Well, that's the nice thing about Upgrade being at 9 a.m. my time on Monday is that I have no excuse.
That's right. You sort of hit the ground running, which I don't mind easing in a little bit, but I do wish sometimes that I had something scheduled for like a Monday afternoon to get me in like, all right, it's work time.
Right.
Got to get back in the zone.
Snap into
it. Left to my own devices, mm-hmm. I will not always be the best manager of my own time.
Trying to ease into the week. That's
interesting. It's a mistake.
To start our recording today, I pressed, I can talk about this now. I've had this going for a while now. I pressed a button on my Stream Deck. Mm-hmm. Which shows the Audio Hijack icon, and when I pressed it, it lit up orange or red or whatever it is, indicating that it is now recording, and it is now recording. And then I'll press it when we're done. I'll press it again, and it'll stop lighting up, and that is the sign that it is not recording anymore. Now I can do this because Audio Hijack 4 supports automation. I'm very excited. If you didn't notice, I'm very excited. It's got some other good stuff in it. It's got a built-in compressor and kind of a quietness booster. So you can choose one of them, kind of compresses loud, gets quieter and quieter, gets louder. That's a compressor. And then there's also a booster where it just makes all the quiet things louder. But that's huge because that's a real... I think that was something that there are third-party plugins that do it, but it's great that that's in there now.
It's super simple too, right? Like I've just thrown it in on
just
basically all of all of my sessions that I use for recording for the I have it set for the bootleg track.
For the bootleg or a live stream. Exactly right. You want to just level that stuff out a little bit because you're grabbing a live recording, but you want it to sound a little bit better and a little bit more leveled.
Not for the stuff that is going to get eventually edited and thrown into Logic, right? But just the stuff where it's like, this is immediately being output, and I want to make it sound a little bit cleaner for people.
The instant post. But so the scripting stuff, though, like, I got to see this in progress. I got to see it when the JavaScript library wasn't entirely finished yet.
And yes, and I were both using the beta, and I at one point texted Paul and was like, "Is there documentation for this? Because I have no idea what's going on."
Yeah, there was a while where there were some example scripts, and literally that was it. It's like try to figure it out from the examples, and then there was some documentation, and then they changed some stuff. There was actually some stuff in my article that I had to change because I wrote it last week, and then there was a build that changed, like. It used to return true. Instead of returning the word true, it returned one. And so my shortcuts were like not working. And I thought, what happened? And it turned out it was returning true instead of one, which is better.
Good old
it's
Boolean
a Boolean.
Values.
You should return true, not one. Thank you. One's a number. True is a Boolean response. Thank you. It did all that. It is the loneliest Boolean. Well, no, I guess zero is even worse. False is the loneliest Boolean. What has struck me about it, so initially I was disappointed in the sense that it is a JavaScript implementation. I don't love JavaScript, but I can...
There's other apps that use, like, I want to say Acorn has scripting also via JavaScript.
Yes, and all of the OmniGroups apps are JavaScript. Scriptable, our pal Sal Segovian is behind that. They're all using JavaScript to do their scripting as well, cross-platform scripting. I mean, the truth is, as much as I don't love JavaScript, and I've learned Python, and I like Python a lot, I totally get why people are using JavaScript. It is widely available. On the Mac, there's a system JavaScript library, JavaScript system you can use. So, and Audio Hijack uses it. Like, it makes sense in that way. And then what they did that I thought was really interesting is that they have three shortcuts actions. And the shortcuts actions are essentially run a script that's in the script library inside Audio Hijack, because there's a window with you can put scripts in, and then you can tell like a session is what they call them, to like run this script when I turn you on or off. So you can embed them in the app. But there's also another one, and there's one that's like turn it on or off, turn your session on or off. But the third one is run this JavaScript. And it wasn't there originally when I started to try it. So you have to sort of like write the scripts and put them in Audio Hijack and then go over to shortcuts and say run that script. And that was kind of a lot. And now that's not the case with the shipping version. You can put JavaScript in a shortcut and run it and get a response back. And that unlocks a lot. There's also one other method that I didn't know about until I read the documentation of the shipping version, which is you can also have JavaScript in a text file in the file system and basically tell it to open, and Audio Hijack opens it and runs it. So if you were using shell scripting or Apple script, even that might be a better way for you to do the control rather than going through shortcuts, is to sort of tell the app directly by writing a file and then telling Audio Hijack to open that file. So you put all this together and it actually ends up being pretty full featured, because once it's in shortcuts or in the file system, you can basically get to it from anywhere. And a lot of the things that it unlocked for me, and keeping in mind the old version of Audio Hijack wasn't scriptable. So like I was doing things in Keyboard Maestro, like click on this button by looking on the screen to find the right button. And then it was not good, like UI kind of macro stuff. And now I can use shortcuts, and then I can also use Keyboard Maestro. And I detailed that in my second post. The nice thing about Keyboard Maestro is that it has the ability to change the images on the buttons of the Stream Deck. And so now that's cool, because you can have like different states that are reflected on the button. But the challenge with a lot of things with the Stream Deck is knowing state. It's like, what's the current state of what's going on? Because you can have a toggle, but like, you have to know like it's recording or it's not recording. And that's the great thing about that JavaScript interface, is that my macros will do things like ask Audio Hijack, are you recording now? And if it is, then it knows what state it's in. And if it's not, it knows what state it's in. And then it changes its behavior based on those things. And that has proven to be really great because in the one example I posted, I made a three-way switch for the Incomparable, which has a complicated setup that allows us to stream live. And it's, you know, it streams music with no voices right at the beginning. And I'm not recording that. And that's just before the show. It's just like what Marco does on ATP. And then you flip a switch basically, and then it does, it starts recording and you hear our voices, and that's all scripted now. And my shortcut knows what to look for in that status to say, to know which state it's in, and then put it to the next state. And then you throw in Keyboard Maestro, and Keyboard Maestro knows what state the shortcut is, it has put it in, and changes the button accordingly. And as a result, I can look at the button while I'm doing the Incomparable, and I know if we're not on, if we're on streaming music, or if we're on broadcasting live, or if we're done and we're back off. And that's pretty awesome. So it's, you know, that's a little more complex, but the idea here is that I think that, like, if you wanted to do some very specific, like, turn this block on and off at a particular time, that's all covered now. And so it makes it pretty easy. Also, just even if you don't want to do automation, there's a menu bar item in Audio Hijack now. So Audio Hijack used to be you had to have it, like, open in order to record something. And now, as long as the menu bar item is up in the menu bar, you can get a drop down with all your sessions, and you can just turn them on and off from there. So you don't actually even need, once you're set up, you don't even need to have the Audio Hijack interface open.
It scares me so much, though, just because, like, I want that safety blanket of, yeah, like, looking at all the lines and making sure the audio is going.
So let me tell you, it takes a few months to get over it. I have gotten over it now, but it takes a few months to get over it. And the nice thing is, in the session list, it also shows the status, and it has a little thing, so you can look at that. And even up in the menu bar, it's got a thing. It shows which one is running. It shows that it's recording. And it even has a little bar that is moving as your voice moves. And so, eventually you learn to accept it. But yeah, I get it, that you might want to just keep it open just so that you feel confident that it's working. But you could even be confident it was working, and then close it.
Sure.
And know that, you know, the files are still there. It's all still working.
I don't want to close it, Jason. What if something happens?
Okay. All right. Well, you keep it open then. You do that. I have the little red button on my Stream Deck to tell me that I'm recording.
Right.
So
right.
I feel just fine. Anyway, it's exciting because that's an app that so many of us use. And I think it's also a great example of why it's a shame that automation is no longer table stakes for an app on the Mac, and is, you know, I think becoming again. And I think if you talk to Paul Kafasis from Rogue Amoeba, he would say, you know, why invest in a system like AppleScript that looks like it's about to be killed, or certainly not ever going to be anything else, when they could do something else that was valid. And now that Shortcuts is here, I think that was their prompt to say, okay, Apple is actually committing to user automation, and we will too. And, you know, as a essentially pro app, it really was painful that I couldn't automate stuff in Audio Hijack. So I'm very excited that there are going to be a lot of possibilities there. I think we're only scratching the surface, and there's more work for them to do. Not every block is controllable right now, scriptable, but, you know, it's 4.0. I think that they will get there. And they're going to listen to how people are using it too. And that's good too.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a starting point, right? Like, I mean, it's so much of this
really
is like, well, this is what we're doing sort of for our first release. As you just said, it's 4.0. The fact that they spent this much time building this whole framework and set of features into the app suggests they're not just going to be like, well, we finished and we never need to update it again.
Yeah. I mean, some companies do that, Apple, but no, I think that they're aware that there are corners of the app that they don't touch it. You and I were talking right before we got started that there's the broadcast block that lets you do a live stream. And they have two. They have a broadcast block and a live stream block. And I was playing with that the other day. Like, live stream block will take it to a video service, and it broadcasts like an image you put in and a waveform. And then there's live stream, which is sort of what Relay and Incomparable and the Rebound and ATP all use. It's like an Icecast server. But there's meta information with that some apps display, metadata about what it is that you're streaming. And it was sort of came from internet radio, where it would be like the name of the mm-hmm. song or whatever. Yeah. It would be great if you could use scripting to, you know, like I have a script, like my shortcut knows what podcast I'm recording because it looks at my calendar, right? And if it finds a match, it my podcast note thing, right? Like the podcast note thing that I've got looks at my calendar and names the note, the name of the thing that it is. Well, once you know the name, you could do stuff like name your recordings that, and you could put it on the live stream and say, this is what this episode is about. You know, it's, you look at the Google calendar, you get the name, you put it in. You can't do that right now. That's one of those areas where they're like, and I totally understand it. It's like, you know, that's one of their less popular things probably. So you can wait for it. But in the long run, I immediately think, well, that would be a great thing to automate because I'm not going to enter in the name of the subject of what we're talking about every time. But if a script can do it, then let's do it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it opens up a lot of possibilities. It makes me, it even puts into stark relief all the places that you wish not only that, you know, third parties would increase their scripting presence, but also, of course, that Apple yeah. would increase its automation stuff, right? Like a couple things that I've thought about in the past, because I've tried to sort of spin out some workflows in Keyboard Maestro and shortcuts and combinations of those to set up for my different podcast recordings, because I've got, you know, different, a lot of times I have different windows I want open or different apps I want open or what have you. And I definitely have frustration with a couple things where it's like, this is your OS, Apple, and you are not allowing me to access things. You know, some stuff is stuff that's been around for years. I'll point out again, Spaces, which is something yeah. that I use in podcasting because I like to have like a separate space to deal with the show that I'm doing right now. Not a thing you can script anywhere. Apple Script doesn't even know what a space is.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, something brand new, Tab Groups. Shortcuts does not know what a tab group is. There is no way to access or create or anything a tab group in Shortcuts, which is eye rolling.
Yeah, and the one that gets me, like Stream Deck, which is this ironically this thing for that I use for automating all these things, itself can't be automated, which is mm-hmm. really frustrating because like I'd like to be able to send a thing to Stream Deck that says, my script says switch to this other view and you can't do it. Like it won't do it. And, right. and this is what I mean about yeah. table stakes is I feel like and Apple needs to work on this and Apple needs to keep Shortcuts visible. And you know, our friend Federico launched his Automation April today at Mac Stories. They're going to do
a bunch
of stuff.
Not a joke, apparently.
Not a joke. There's a contest. There's a whole thing. But the more we talk about Shortcuts and the more Shortcuts is integrated into the Mac. And I'm encouraged by the fact that like John Gruber and I have had lots of conversations about Shortcuts recently, which I think is funny because like he's a Mac guy. He's not really an iOS guy and he's an automation guy and he's really intrigued, also frustrated, but intrigued by what can be done with Shortcuts. And like the more of that we get, the better, because what we need to have is a world where when a Mac app comes out and its Shortcuts integration is bad, it gets dinged for it. Because we need, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the ding, by the way, follows the shame, shame, shame. Ding. You know, that's a Game of Thrones reference. Anyway, remember that? Remember that show? Anyway, the idea is you should be ashamed if you do a Mac app and you don't have Shortcuts, proper Shortcuts integration. And yeah, I would like it if Apple came out and said, we also are really going to find ways to encourage people to use JavaScript or whatever to control their apps. And we're gonna ride that train too. And Apple Script will kind of fade into the sunset. But, you know, that's what we need because really there are lots of corners of Apple's apps and the system and a lot of other popular apps that are just not controllable. And I had to send out a bunch of emails to a bunch of people, like 150 emails to a bunch of people the other week. And I never use Apple Mail. And I used Apple Mail. I set up Apple mm-hmm. Mail and I wrote an Apple script because Apple Mail is scriptable. And it's just, it killed me to do it. But like, it was the only real option that I had. So more, you know, everything, or actually our friend, Joe Steele, was mm-hmm. Lamenting the fact that he can't right, script yeah. muffles. He wants to muffle like TV shows when they air until he's done watching them in Tweetbot, let's say, or Twitterific or whatever. But none of those apps have proper automation for that stuff. And it's a shame.
Yep. Yep, it is a shame. I mean, there's a lot of apps that I use on a daily basis that I don't even think about automating because of the fact that it's not so widely available, that it's not an automatic assumption like, oh yeah, I'm sure I'll be able to do X in this app. And like you said, we are at a point where it feels like that needs to be something more and more embraced by the community as well as by Apple, just so that we can get to a point where the expectation right. is there. Like, I should at least look at automating this and maybe there's something I can do with it, as opposed to the, you know, having that 50% of like a whiff every time you're like, oh, I wonder if I could do this in shortcuts. Oh no, nope. It doesn't support shortcuts.
The the people won't remember this, but I go back long enough that I can say this used to be the case. It used to be the case when I was at Mac User and Macworld, it used to be the case that apps got dinged if they didn't have AppleScript support. It's true. I mean, it used to be the case, especially apps that people would, you know, not like a game or something, but apps that people would use for, you know, for work would get dinged if they didn't have proper AppleScript support, because it was like a part of the checklist, right? And AppleScript, you know, I would argue Shortcuts has the potential to be way more popular than AppleScript. Because of the interface being more easy to use and you don't have to like type out lines of code. And so the more of that, the better. That's also why I think Audio Hijack needs to add a bunch more actions, because although you can do everything using JavaScript, it would be kind of nice if they had a bunch of pre-baked stuff that was in the idiom of Shortcuts, instead of having to do like I should be able to find out if a thing is running without doing a one-line JavaScript that returns a Boolean, sure. Right? Yeah. But that's right now. I get it why it is the way it is, but I'd like to see more of that. But in general, I think Shortcuts has that potential to be more popular, and that we all need to look at apps and say, why doesn't it, you know, why is it Shortcut support not very good? And it should be better. And that is the case on iOS as well as macOS, but definitely on macOS. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think all of these things are to the good, because they do encourage it. And as people like, you know, you, a little bit me, Federico, everybody talk more about what we can do with Shortcuts, I think that also helps in encouraging people to developers to say like, oh, look how much people can do, but you know, the slightly cynical part of me is like, look how much attention these apps get because you can do stuff with Shortcuts, which is, you know, not a bad reason for integrating it.
It's not a bad reason. I was actually, there's another app I use that's Broadcasts, which is by Stephen Trouton Smith, and he's got a new version coming out that supports Shortcuts, because he had no automation either. And I'm excited about this because I have a use case, which is I have that little menu bar thing that you built, and I think I rebuilt it in Python at some point, but it's a little menu bar app that runs inside of SwiftBar that shows how many people are listening to the Relay FM or Incomparable. For me, I think you'd use it for the Rebound too, live stream.
Yep.
And I realized that, you know, and you can click like go to the live stream and it opens the web page of the live stream. And I like the broadcast app. So I wanted to adapt it so that it goes to, it just opens the broadcast app to that live stream. And you can't do it because it's not automatable. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't know what his implementation is and if I can literally just pass a live stream URL and it will load it, or whether I need to give it like the name of the bookmark that it is. But that's another example where I'm waiting for a new version of an app that has shortcut support, because once that exists, I'll be able to wire this thing up and use the app I want instead of opening a web page. It's just, you know, it's, and who knows how people will use this stuff, but it's nice. It's nice to have it there. For those of us who do that, and that was always my favorite thing about automation, always was connecting apps together. Like for me, that was always the great thing. Is like I use two apps, and they don't need to know about each other. They don't need to know that they exist. But I use them both every day, and I want them to talk to each other. And then if I could do some automation, that's when the magic happens, right? Is because now I'm not using two apps. I'm using this kind of like symphony of the two apps together with my stuff that I wrote to do my job. And that was always like, I did that with like FileMaker and Eudora, right? Like back in the day where it was sweeping up emails and putting them in a database and like, and generating emails out of a database. And it was just so great. And they didn't need to know anything about one another because, you know, I did that part. And that's when things start to get really good with user automation. So, hey, thanks, Rogue Amoeba, for that and for all you do. I mean, we use all their apps, really.
I use a lot of Rogue Amoeba.
There are so many. But Audio Hijack is a number one in my book.
Yep. Nope. Couldn't get by without it.
No. Anything else? I mean, Apple Enterprise report card went out. This is, you know, for those of you who are administrators of and IT people, it's just, it's like the primal scream of of how Apple's doing. And I always learn stuff from it because I'm not immersed in that world. And it was funny to see most of the scores actually got better. I think last year they were much crankier than they were this year. But there are a few areas where Apple still kind of makes us IT people angry. The one that made me laugh is that everybody mentioned that Apple only supports network single sign-on from Azure, so basically Microsoft.
Mm.
And they're like, well, okay, more than one, please. And it sounds like Apple has actually committed to doing Google single sign-on this spring at some point. And my impression is that that's like, well, that's good. More, please. Like, that it's pretty limited. But, you know, in general, my same takeaway as last year, which is I'm impressed by the fact that people in this space seem to understand Apple's commitment to privacy, including user privacy, even though it sometimes makes their jobs more difficult. Because, mm-hmm. yep. you know, there are things that Apple won't let them do because it would violate user privacy. This group at least kind of appreciates that because they know that Apple's intentions are good there. That was interesting. There's a lot. It's a long read. If you
it's a very different perspective from like, you know, we do our report card, you know, at the beginning of the year, and like, yeah, it's just a very different angle on the same country, right? Like, it's always kind of fascinating in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those who are into that world, that is why we do it. I know Apple's enterprise people at least pay attention to it, so I'm sure they're reading it. And it's a chance. I mean, really, it's a chance for me to give them a platform and a voice.
Sure.
And you know, I learned a bunch from it. There's a lot of technical detail. It's not for everybody, but if you're somebody who is in that world, I hope you got something out of it. I would say it's a fun project to do. It's not. It's actually a lot of work to do, but I think it's illuminating in a lot of ways. So, like the regular report card, you end up editing people who are not writers, and so you end up editing them. That's part of the challenge. I was trying to de-jargonify some of it. You'll look at it and think it's full of jargon, and I assure you, it used to be more full of jargon. And I tried to, you know, I tried to make everything complete sentences and stuff like that. So that was a lot of work, but. But if you're in that world, I think it's worth reading through and at least looking at the top level stuff. Also, they seem to be on the same roller coaster as the regular report card people in terms of good year, bad year
sure.
for software.
Right.
So this year they're, you know, it's the, oh, this was a disaster, Big Sur, followed by Monterey. Oh yeah, this wasn't as bad as last year. I'm feeling okay. And then, you know, presumably next year they'll be angry again. That seems to be just how it happens these days. I guess I should be dreading WWDC, which has not been announced, by the way, yet.
Yeah, I was actually a little surprised. I was going to put money down on it being announced last Tuesday because it was roughly lined up with when they announced it last year, but nope.
They didn't. Maybe next week. Maybe next week, maybe. Yeah, maybe. I know I've said on some podcast somewhere that I do believe at some point they are going to do an event at Apple Park again.
At some point.
My theory about WWDC is it will eventually be an entirely online event, but there will be a media event on the opening day, so that they'll invite like media to come for the kickoff event.
Right.
But for WWDC, but it won't be like it won't ever be like it was. That's sort of my prediction, is that they'll still do an in-person event for a keynote, essentially. But that'll just be press and VIPs and stuff.
Well, they
special
want,
developers.
You know, getting people get their hands on stuff. And
right, that's always that. The reason you do that. But we'll see. I mean, all the rumors about the VR headset, that it strikes me that at some point the number one reason they want people back is so they can let people get their hands on the products. who are the press, right? And that's the number one reason you do a press event. And they haven't been able to do that for a while. So maybe this year, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm not feeling optimistic about it, but I agree that at some point it'll probably happen. Yeah. Maybe later this year. I'm not feeling great about WWDC, but...
No, I imagine WWDC will be exactly like it was.
I think it'll be like the last couple of years. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, all virtual, which has its ups.
I have a Mac Studio follow-up item for you.
Okay.
I ordered that this Mac, I should get the name of it, right? It's from Otherworld Computing. So MacSales.com. Well, I mean, I just ordered a 2-meter Thunderbolt cable from.
Oh dear God! I don't want to know what that costs.
Well, it's less than from Apple. Is
less
the answer?
Than Apple's. Good.
It's okay. $57 cable. That's right, $57 cable.
Got all the Thunderbolts in it.
Yeah, but what I ordered last week and I got this week is something called the NewerTech New Shelf NU Mount Dual for Mac Mini. Now, this is free up valuable space by mounting up to 2 Mac Minis under a desk.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what's about the size of a little more than 2 Mac Minis? So I have, it's like a Lucite thing screwed under my desk with a Mac Studio sitting in it. And it works.
Nice.
So my Mac Studio is now under my desk. Actually, toward the front, I can reach out and touch it. And so then if I need to press the power button, I can reach back there and press the power button, which was one of the issues that I had. I didn't want to mount it like so far back that I couldn't
plug. Like lean
and,
over
and I have access to the front ports, right? Yep.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, they put them there. You might as well use them.
Yeah, so and the card slot and all of that. But it's under the desk, so my desk is a lot clearer. And the only problem with it is right now the Thunderbolt cable is running forward toward me and then makes a curve and tucks under the front of my desk in order to reach because, you know, it's not long enough. But I got a new one coming, and then I've got my VESA mount display coming, and eventually it'll all be...
There'll be nothing on the desk.
There'll be
the
nothing
desk will
on
be
the
empty.
Desk. That's right. That's not the way I like it. Because then I can just lay down on the desk.
After a hard day of work.
For the reading of the rules of the, what is that? The flexies. They lay down for the flexies. Those guys. I was reading Connected History, and I like how they didn't used to have that many rules, and they just, and they cited me because they were stealing my draft idea, which is not really mine, but I like that they cited me. But now it's all been lost to history, and it's just its own thing. Anyway,
one thing.
The podcast world.
The podcast world is a weird, weird.
It's a weird, wacky space.
It's a weird, wacky world.
We're happy to be a part of it. That's what I'm saying. We're happy to be a part of it. Anything else going on that we should talk about?
It's been pretty quiet. I've got a Macworld column coming out on Monday, which is might be a little bit like your enterprise report card in that it's like a scream into the darkness, but it's talking about regulation, everybody's favorite.
Oh yeah,
and how. And how ineffective the attempts at regulation have been, and how Apple basically is gonna essentially try to minimize the impact. I mean, you and I have talked about this a bunch. Like their goal is, it's a lot like with taxes, right? You know, they spend a lot of time and effort trying to pay as little tax as possible within the confines of the law, you know, loopholes, etc., included. And I think that they take the same approach to regulation, right? They're gonna try to do everything can and be like, all right, well, we'll do what the thing you said, but we're gonna do it this way. And we're going to like just barely meet the criteria you have set out. And if that's good for people, great. And if it's not good, tough. So the impetus being the external link rules that came out this past week,
right,
for reader apps, which of course are just as terrible and onerous as I think we all expected they probably would be, combined with the sort of their back and forth over with the Dutch regulators about alternative payment systems and all of that. And then I threw in a little bit there also about the this EU Digital Markets Act, where they're trying to make the communications platforms interoperable. And I think my proudest moment in this piece was suggesting that if Apple is ever forced to do this, and does, you can easily imagine that like every message sent from people on different services will be like in a red bubble or something.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, just want to let you know, this is insecure potentially. Quarantine. It's not through Apple. Just let you know.
Danger. Danger. Yeah. Yeah. I like that they have a full screen warning that is like,
oh my God, it's hilarious.
You tapped a link on the internet. You're going to be sent to the internet. Apple won't save you. Do you want to go to the internet? Like, God.
It's so obnoxious. I love the fact the fact that your URL has to go in like this one variable basically. And like you can't change it,
nope.
And it's the only variable allowed, and you can't pass any arguments and any information. Yeah. It's just a straight up URL, and you're like, this is very obnoxious.
In the end, I think it'll be okay, because what you'll do is you'll send them to a page, and it has to be in Safari, not a web view. So you'll send them to a page, and they'll log in. And once they're logged in, every time they tap that link, they're gonna go out to the place where they're logged in, and presumably those pages. If they're smart, the people will format those pages to provide whatever they expect that people are going to want once they're logged in. And it will be less onerous at that point. But
it's still annoying.
It is amazing, because it's just like, I don't know, like Apple won't protect you. That's the part that gets me. It's like, I guess they really, you know, believe that when you're in an app and you tap on a link, oh boy, you know, if you
anything could happen.
Anything happen. Except like, you know, I tap on links all the time to like stories and stuff, and they open in web views, and it's not a big deal. But this is like, oh yeah, but this is different, because this is the maker of the app you're using taking you to their web page, and that's dangerous. I'm like, is it? You approved this app. Like, this is probably okay. And if it's not, like, how is it less okay than all the other web links of all the other places? Oh, I don't know. It's very silly. But you're right. I predicted in the upgrade episode 400 draft, where we predicted what will happen in 2 years, essentially, for episode 500, that that Apple will be offering sideloading somewhere in the world.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be forced to.
But boy, you want to think about what that's going to look like.
Oh, it's going to be hilarious.
There's going to be so many buttons and screens to tap through.
Somebody tried to tell me that well, no, that won't happen, because they'll make it illegal to put up warning messages, and they'll probably make it have to be on by default and all that. And I'm like,
nope.
I don't know. I don't think that's true. I think that when this comes down, it's going to be, yes, you can warn people, and yes, it can be off by default because of security issues. You just need to give people the option. And it will be a lot like, honestly, if you've turned on sideloading in Android, there are lots of warnings. It's off by default, and Google's like, Google won't protect you, right? And I'm reminded of like developer mode in Chrome OS, where Google again is like, this is not good. Don't do this. Do you want to do this? And then you say yes, and then you do. It's going to be like that. It's going to be this thing where Apple will be forced to do this, but they will try to scare the bejesus out of you. Ooga booga, maybe for good reason, but again, like the point is that Apple will just, you know, blinking lights and red sirens,
you know,
and
it's
danger, danger, danger.
It's funny too, because that always makes me think of John Moltz telling me about, and I don't know if this is still the case, but it was at least a year or two ago, profiles on iOS, right? You can install a certificate profiles or whatever, right? Like when you do the beta program, or sometimes when you do a third party thing or a VPN or something like that. Apparently there's no parental controls on that. So he had a story about his son would like be installing things for like weird, like literally like Minecraft mods or something. I don't remember. It was like, and it would just like, because if you're a kid and you see all those warnings, it's just like, yeah, whatever. I just click through all of it.
Yeah.
So that's like, there better be some restrictions on this, at least from a parental control standpoint, because the chances of like you and I would read it, or maybe your average user would read it, like, oh man, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't enable this, I should be careful.
That's how
a 12-year-old is just gonna be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, that's all the malware gets on Macs, right? Is that they say let me tell you how to install this, and then when it comes up with this warning, you just say okay and put in your password, and like, all right, it's I'll like, do that.
Yeah, there you go. Problem solved.
Yeah, and there's no doubt about it. Like, I'm not saying that sideloading isn't going to lead to bad stuff like that. It's totally going to lead
absolutely
to bad stuff like that.
But yeah.
And that's why Apple needs to build in protections like they have on the Mac, where they can kill stuff via other means, so that if something bad is circulating, they can just kill it. Right. And you know, it doesn't matter that it's on your device. It just stops working.
Do you remember? That made me think years and years ago. This was like really early in the App Store day. There was like a whole kerfuffle over the fact that they had a kill switch.
Yeah.
Which they essentially do now and nobody cares. But like that was a big deal at the time. Oh, Apple can just remotely nuke any program. Like people freaked out about that.
And now they added it to the Mac, right? They added it to the Mac a few years ago too. Yeah.
It rarely gets used as a thing, right?
And it is, right. And Apple knows with the scrutiny that it's got that. I mean, it is... Apple has multiple ways to do it, but it's like there's onboard malware, and there was something recently where that happened on the Mac.
They have to kill something,
That something came out, and they basically just pushed out an update. Your Mac checks like once a day or something to this file at Apple, and basically it kills those apps because it wants the ability, if something is spreading, to just have the system stomp on it, which is, you know, I would say it's a good thing. I like the idea that you can install anything you want on a Mac and run it and they're not going to stop you. I don't mind that they're going to yell at you. I mean, I mind a little, but it's okay for them to do that as long as in the end I can say, no, I really do want to run this shady thing that I downloaded on the internet. I do. I it's my computer. I do. And if they do if they're forced to do this on iOS, same deal, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Good week. Busy Thursday. We'll be back next week with more. Until then. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.